This time on the K-League United podcast. With the season drawing closer, we turn our eyes to the continent as we begin to preview the AFC Champions League. With Group G already determined, we set about previewing Buriram United, Urawa Red Diamonds, Beijing Guoan, and the K-League champions Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors. We'll be joined by experts from around Asia to offer their insight on each team and what to expect from them in this potential group of death. All this and more on this edition of the K-League United podcast. Hello, annyeonghaseyo. Welcome to the K-League United podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Binns, making a long-awaited return back to the booth to be with you today. And there's good reason for that. On today's episode of the podcast, we start turning our attention to this year's edition of the AFC Champions League. In what is set to be the first in a series of three or four podcasts, depending on the outcome of Ulsan's playoff, myself and our other site editors will preview each Asian Champions League group featuring a K-League side ahead of the tournament's kickoff. Joining us on each episode will be a number of writers and experts from across the continent to provide detailed insight on each club taking part. We begin the series, though, by taking a look at Group G, the only group made up of four sides who have entered the competition directly through winning either their domestic league or cup competition. The group consists of Thai Premier League champions Buriram United, Japan's Emperor Cup winners Urawa Reds, Chinese FA Cup winners Beijing Guoan, and K-League One champions Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors. Later, I'll be joined by Paul Murphy, Ryan Steele, and Brandon Chemers to get the rundown on Buriram United, Urawa Reds, and Beijing Guoan respectively. But first, being K-League United's Jeonbuk columnist, I sat down to be interviewed by our own Paul Neat about what to expect from the reigning K-League champions. Here's how it went.
So I'm Paul Neat, and I'm joined by Matthew Binns to talk about Jeonbuk Hyundai Motors.
Hello, Paul.
Jeonbuk will, of course, be probably the favourite Korean team, would you say?
Easily. You know, obviously they are the champions of the K-League One, and they've been favourites in the Champions League last season, and in 2016 they were champions.
Indeed. So, like you said, there they are, the champions. We know that. But a brief summary of last season.
Well, last season, Jeonbuk finished first. They wrapped up the league with six games remaining. But they went on a bit further than that, and they achieved the record goals and points per game averages ever in the K-League history. However, there was this kind of lingering feeling of what might have been, if you'd like. They were out of the Asian Champions League in the quarterfinal stages to bitter rival Suwon Blue Wings. Jeonbuk were one of the favourites to win the tournament going in. But despite an impressive second leg against Suwon, they lost on penalties. And it's given the amount of investment they put in last season, they invested heavily in the off-season. It was disappointing to go out of the Champions League at that stage. Everybody, that club was built for Champions League success.
So in the off-season then, it sounds like it would be all geared towards regaining that ACL title.
Well, yeah. You think it would be. It's first, before we go into the off-season, it's worth mentioning that Jeonbuk's manager of, 14 years, Choi Kang-hee, has left the club. He left on the fact that he thought he'd done all he could, and he wanted to go on to a new challenge, and so he has. So he went to Tianjin, who became Tianhai, and he's now in Dalian. Jose Murray is in. He's the former Barnsley manager, but if you believe the Korean media, he's actually famous for his assistant managerial roles to Jose Mourinho at Inter Milan, Real Madrid, and Chelsea second stint. That does lead us into the off-season. There has been notable transfers in, but what is interesting about these transfers is they feel like very Jeonbuk signings, which makes me think that the board of directors are still controlling things when it comes to transfer level. In, we've had the likes of Bernie Ibany, Mun Son Min, who's coming from Incheon, Choi Yong Jun from Gangnam, Kim Min Hyuk from Sagan Tosu, and Lee Bom Young from Gangwon. We've also had youngsters coming like Hang Sun Kyu from Ulsan and Lee Kun Ho from Pohang, and Hong Jong Ho has also extended his loan spell at the club. Out, though, most notably, Kim Min-jae has left. Kim Min-jae was obviously the star centre-back. with John Book. He's been star centre back for two seasons, young player of the year a couple of seasons ago. He's gone to Beijing for about roughly $6 million. They've also lost EJ Sung, the centre back, and Cho Sung Hwan has left. But for the most part, they've kept their squad from last season and just built on it. What is interesting, especially, is that they've brought in two wingers in Moon Son Min and Ibony. Both of them play out on the wing, which John Book always had reasonable wingers in Lopez, Thiago, and Han Kyo-won, but adding to that depth, you think that Murray is looking to, you know, spread the play, spread it out wide a bit more than previous. As I said, they've also brought in two youngsters in Hang Seung-kyu and Lee Kun-ho. This is partly because in the K-League there's an under 23 rule that there has to be an under 23 player on the pitch to have all three substitutes. But Han Seung-kyu himself, he is the young player of the year, and he looks set to replace EJ Sung in the attacking midfield role.
So we don't know because we haven't seen them play under the new regime, mm-hmm. but likely tactics. What are we expecting, do you think?
Okay, so well, before Tae Kyung-hee left, their preferred tactics for ACL was always a 4-1-4-1 formation. What we can say is from pre-season, Jose Murray has been playing a 4-2-3-1 formation. There isn't much difference between the two formations. It's still a five-man midfield, but it usually dictates how many defensive midfielders you have or whether you have an attacking midfielder sitting behind the striker. For Murray, it's a bit strange. It's hard because you don't know who's making the tactics. Now, these still feel like very John Book style teams. Murray at Barnsley, I mean, I handpicked about six or seven of his fixtures in his last Barnsley fixtures, and he frequently changed. He went from a 3-4-3, a 4-4-2, a 4-3-3. There was no consistency between his fixtures at Barnsley, and same at his other clubs as well. He's a bit, he likes to experiment a lot more. But yeah, looking at what he's done so far in pre-season, he's kept to the John Book mould. There's no real surprises. Lopez has played all three on the left. I guess that is a surprise because he used to play right for John Book, but he is capable on the left, and he has played on the left as well. Thiago and Ibony have played on the right for John Book. Thiago, again, this is strange because Thiago played on the left. So what we've seen in pre-season is he switched to the wingers. But again, Thiago can play on the right, so it's not really much of a scoop.
I think in the modern day, wingers can usually play on either, yeah. on either side.
For John Book in general, they tend to just overlap down the wing. And I couldn't really see any difference in the limited pre-season footage that has escaped. They just tend to have wingers that come inside, and the wing-backs, which will be Kim Jin-soo and E-Yong, although they've not been available in pre-season, they're likely to overlap and send in crosses. Yeah. So I don't expect too much difference to how John Book normally line up.
And certainly with the signings that you mentioned there as well, that it certainly seems that way. That's mm-hmm. how they're going to play. So speaking of players and individual personnel, is it one of the new signings that you're going to pick out as one to watch, or is it one of the old stalwarts?
It'll be one of the old stalwarts. I think it's got to be Ricardo Lopez. I think last season was his third season in John Book, and he signed a contract for three more years. And what we saw last season is he can, when he's on the pitch, his influence is, it's notable, and he can score goals. He scored 13 league goals, got 7 assists last season, and he can create something out of nothing. What I like, I don't like to make the comparison too much, but John Book's, probably one of John Book's most famous foreign players is Leonardo, who left at the end of the 2016 season. But Leonardo was influential in the league, and he helped almost win the Champions League. He scored one of the goals in the final. And Lopez has kind of taken that mantle. That was Lopez's debut season, but 3 years on, I'd say that Lopez has taken that, and he can score any kind of goal, but he's taking on this game-changing role. And with him having three more years and being the most experienced foreigner in the side, I feel that he's going to be key this season. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he brings to the table.
So this might sound like a stupid question, but what would be considered a successful campaign?
Given John Book's investment, John Book invests to win the Champions League. Whether that should be expected is another matter. I think from the fans' perspective, I think the fans would anything quarterfinals and beyond would be acceptable. Whether that's achievable though is another matter. As we said before with Jose Mourinho, we've hinted at he's very unpredictable with his tactics, but he's also got a very low win percentage as a manager. Obviously, the Korean media are building him up as this assistant to Jose Mourinho, who's won Champions Leagues in Europe. But this is his first real test. I think Jose Mourinho will be okay in the K-League because the gap between John Book and their nearest competitors in terms of quality is vast. But in the Champions League, where tactical nous may come into play, we're going to really see him tested here. And in the group that we have, and as we're going to hear from our other interviewees later in this podcast, there are three very good teams in this group. Buriram United tested John Book already last year in the round of 16. Beijing Guoan had a very good season winning the FA Cup and excited to be back in the tournament. And Urawa Reds, they won the tournament in 2017 and they did very well in the J-League last year, winning the Emperor's Cup. These are three very good teams and Jose Mourinho is going to have to be able to demonstrate tactical understanding to progress through the group. If he progresses through the group, then who knows? But I think this group stage will really put his ability to the test.
Yeah, certainly be a big test for him and for a lot of the new players that have come in as well. All right, well, that was John Book. And up next we have...
Up next on the K-League United podcast, we have Paul Murphy previewing Buriram United.
FNR is a revolutionary football-dedicated digital platform, the first of its kind in Australia. It provides a 24/7 live online radio platform experience, podcast hub, and acts as a content provider for TV, radio, and digital. Having reached millions of listeners and football fans since launching 13 months ago, FNR is accessible worldwide via its website or app, providing a platform to discuss, debate, and celebrate the world game. We are your voice of football, FNR Football Nation Radio.
Welcome back to the K-League United podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Binns, and joining me on the line from Bangkok, Thailand, to help preview Buriram United is Thai football writer Paul Murphy. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thanks again for joining us on the podcast. Are you looking forward to another year of Asian Champions League action?
Very much so. It's always one of the highlights of the year, and we just hope Thai interest goes on as long as possible.
Yeah, well, last year as well, going... all the way to the knockout stages where they did verse John Book, which they're going to verse them again this year, certainly seemed to garner a lot of interest looking from overseas.
Yeah, they did well last year. They've unfortunate to meet maybe a side as strong as John Book in the last 16, because I think they could have possibly gone further with a better draw.
Yeah, well, talking about last season, perhaps you could just start off with a little bit of a recap of last year and how they find themselves here.
Well, it was another successful. I mean, Buriram have been quite dominant in Thailand for some time, as you'll know. And it was another successful season for them. So it was their fifth title win in 6 years. They won a bit of a canter in the end. Part of that, I think, was due to their rivals. A couple of their rivals are scaling back financially, like Mung Tong United and Chiang Rai. A couple of teams are in transitional periods, Bangkok United and Port FC, really. And I think the way was a bit clear for them last year, and the way it hasn't been possibly in other years. And they won, they got a record points total, and they won by 16 points in the end. And they were quite relentless towards the end of the season. I think they won 14 of the last 15 games in the league. Didn't do so well in the domestic competition, in the domestic cup competitions. They lost in the final of the FA Cup to Chiang Rai. But obviously, they'd had a good ACL campaign. And, you know, they at home against John Book, they were very close to making it 4-1. Mm-hmm. Missed a great chance. And, of course, with John Book's late goal, it turned things around. So a possible 4-1 victory became a 3-2 win. And obviously that gave John Book a much stronger position for the return leg.
Yeah.
So it was another strong season for Buriram. And I think the season ahead, it's going to be very interesting for a number of reasons.
So how have they followed on from that season into the transfer window? Have there been any notable changes to the squad in the off-season?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most interesting factors. Diogo Luis Santo, who's been their top player really for 4 years, has left. He's gone to JDT in Malaysia. A lot of people think he's potentially the best import player ever in the Thai League and possibly the best ever player in the Thai League in terms of his quality. And it's notable that in his four-year period with the club, the only year that Buriram didn't win the league was when he spent much of it injured. And that was the year in which they had a meltdown in the Champions League. And you probably remember they got beaten 6-0 at home by FC Seoul. The game in which he was injured early in the game when the scores were still at 0-0. So he's had a huge influence on the team. So his absence is going to really be difficult to replace. They brought in Modibo Maiga, a Mali international striker, who's had spells in League One in France, played for West Ham, never really made it there, had a loan spell at QPR and has spent the last few years in West Asia. So it's going to be interesting to see how he gets on. I'd say the jury's very much out on him. He's 31 years old as well, so he's not coming at an optimum age, whereas Diogo came at 27. So he's not one for the future, let's say. He's a short-term measure. But to be as good as Diogo, I don't think he's going to be a match for Diogo. We've also seen the arrival of Hajime Hosogai, the former Japan international midfielder. Someone with a very good profile. He's played for several years in Germany. But again, his age, he's 32 years old. He's come carrying an injury, and we're not quite sure when we're going to see him on the pitch yet. And he's replacing, really, Yoo Jun-soo, the Korean, who's gone back to Korea, I believe, to Pohang Steelers.
Yes.
And I thought he was a very good player. I thought he did very well for Buriram last year. So, again, I'm not sure that the replacement is going to be as strong as who was in the position last year. I mean, Yoo Jun-soo was very good in terms of his flexibility. He could play in central defence. He was mostly a defensive midfielder, however, but he was a good player for them. So overall, I would say they're looking slightly weaker in terms of the foreign players. We've also seen a couple of Filipino players arrive, Stefan Parla and Luke Woodland, but no significant Thai arrivals. So overall, I'd say they're looking a little bit weaker than they were in terms of the squad.
Yeah, do you see these, the departures and these inbound players changing their style of tactics in any way?
I don't think that will significantly change. I mean, I think they always prefer a back three. And I think they've got the two wing-backs are still there. The two key centre-backs are still there. Stefan Parla looks like he might play as part of a back three on the left-hand side, which leaves, obviously, the two wing-backs to move forward. 3-5-2 formation, possibly a 3-4-2-1 at times. But definitely that's going to be key to their approach, is keeping that solidity in defence, but having the flexibility to be more defensive or more attacking as they please. So I don't really anticipate too much change on that front.
Okay, and for the players that are still there, or even the players that they've brought in, which players do you think that those unfamiliar with Buriram United should be looking to keep an eye out for?
I'm very interested to see how Supachai Jide goes this year. He had a breakthrough year last year. He's just on 20, but he's been nerveless. He's shown absolutely very strong temperament so far. I mean, he played a number of the games in the Champions League, generally playing behind the strikers, but he can play up front, and he's shown he's scored a few goals for Thailand now. He scored against China in the Asian Cup. So I think he might, if they play him in the right position, he might catch a few eyes this year. Osvaldo, the Brazilian international, he hadn't signed for Buriram for the ACL campaign last year. He had a couple of caps for Brazil some years ago, but he's a very skillful player. He can certainly create a lot. He can score a couple, not a prolific goal scorer, but I think he's going to possibly be very important for them, especially in the absence of Diogo. And I think in terms of creativity, again, you can't leave out the two wing-backs who did a lot for them in the Champions League campaign last year. Korakot on the left, Sasalak on the right. great at going forward. Korakot's got great set piece delivery, and Sasolak's got a great engine going up the right hand side. So I think those four players possibly will be the ones to watch.
Okay, and finally, what would be considered a successful Asian Champions League campaign for the club, and can you envisage them achieving it?
It's hard to say because people always look upon Thai clubs as underdogs in their group. Mm-hmm. But that kind of this could be a bit misleading given the budget and resources that Buriram have. They've been to the last eight before. They've got to the last 16 last year. They've been unlucky a couple of times not to progress from the group. You have to say that getting out of the group is always an achievement. Mm. However, I think any club wants to see progress. And they probably say satisfactory to get out of the group. And it will be very big achievement to get beyond that. That's certainly what the club president is always sort of aiming for, is to get back into that, into the later stages. But again, it's going to be very tough. And again, like I said, I think it's a slightly weaker looking squad at the moment. So I think they'll do well to get out of the group. And I think realistically, the club would probably say the same thing.
Okay. Thanks again, Paul, then, for joining us on the Kayla United podcast. If people wish to know more about Thai football, where can they find you?
Well, I've got a blog, thaifooty.com. I write for various websites at times, so please find me on Twitter as well, Paul Murphy BKK.
Okay, great stuff. Cheers, Paul. After the break, we turn our attention to the 2017 champions, Urawa Reds. Don't go anywhere.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email KLU at info@kleagueunited.com or tweet at @KLeagueUnited with any questions, comments or reactions. Or follow us on Facebook to ask directly during one of our live shows.
Welcome back to the K-League United podcast. I'm Matthew Binns. Before the break, you heard the thoughts of Thai football expert Paul Murphy on Buriram United. We now move on to the next side in the group, J-League outfit Urawa Red Diamonds. And to offer his expert opinion on the team is Urawa Red fan and professional football coach Ryan Steele. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you, mate.
Are you glad to be back in the Champions League?
Yeah, I mean, we only had a year out, but yeah, it was a shame to not be able to defend our title. So it'd be good to kind of get back in and test our mettle against the best in Asia again.
Well, as a John Book fan, I can fully appreciate that, although I think ours was more to do with criminal activities off the field. So for our listeners who may not be aware, Urawa Reds won the Asian Champions League in 2017, as we've just mentioned, and they look good doing so, but they didn't qualify for last season's tournament. So what have they been up to on the domestic front since then, whilst not competing in this competition?
So last year, we had a few managerial changes. Hori, who was the coach that won the Champions League, was shown the door in, I think, April. And a month later, Oswaldo Oliveira came in. So there was a little bit of instability at the start of the season. It sort of worked itself out towards the end of the season, and we came back into the Champions League via an Emperor's Cup win.
Okay, and with them now back on the continental front then, with that Emperor's Cup win, as you mentioned, has there been any notable movement in the transfer window ahead of fighting in Asia?
So there's been a few changes. The main departures, I suppose, would be Zlatan Ljubijankic, who is now out of contract. I think the club just wanted to give him a chance to find someone that was a club where he would be playing more regularly. The other big change up front would be Tadanari Lee. He's been a regular with the team for a number of years, really. But he's moved on to Yokohama F. Marinos. The other two that I would say are probably recognisable from at least last season were Daisuke Kikuchi, who's now at Kashiwa, and Kosuke Takatomi, who's on loan to Belmare. I think they're probably just looking for more regular game time, much like Zlatan. The two biggest changes coming, or sorry, the actually four, yeah, I've got four biggest changes coming in. We've got a new Brazilian player called, I think it's Everton. I'm not quite sure on the pronunciation, just I didn't really look before I jumped in, but he's on loan from Porto, a midfielder player that definitely I think is someone that's going to be a regular player. Ryosuke Yamanaka, who's come in from Yokohama F. Marinos, he's a defender, midfielder, sort of plays on the left side of the pitch, who I think will add some strong depth. Daisuke Suzuki from Kashiwa Reysol, who is probably going to be a main player as well. I think he's going to be in the back line. And Kenyu Sugimoto coming in from Cerezo Osaka, who's been a regular for them. So it was a little bit of a surprise to see him join Urawa. But I think he will probably see some game time, but maybe not as much as the other three that I've just mentioned.
Okay, well, it sounds like quite a strong selection for the most part. So moving on to tactics then, how are the team known for playing? And will these transfers require a shift in tactics to accommodate them?
I think the changes primarily give them more flexibility in what they can do. Though for the last few years, since they had Mihailo Petrovic as their manager, who came in 2002 and left in 2017. So since he came in and even continuing on with Oliveira, they've played mainly with three at the back. And I think they're going to remain with that. But having players like Yamanaka come into the side gives them that ability to kind of have more width in defence, and also kind of change up how they control the midfield as well. I think having Everton in the team kind of adds a different element, because they've got a lot more depth in midfield with more experienced players as well. So they're going to be able to change up how certain players, so Yosuke Kashiwagi is one of the key players for the team, one of the more creative players, and having Everton in the team kind of frees Oliveira's tactical, I suppose, abilities to be able to push Kashiwagi further up, because he'd be playing a lot deeper lately, and have Everton kind of more of a player behind him to support the change between defense and midfield, or the movement between defense and midfield. So it gives them some ability to alternate how they're going to play. We might see a change back to a four at back, which I think is Oliveira's probably preferred play style, given his history in Japan. I think we'll see a lot of the similar things, but the signings that have come in show that there is a lot more tactical flexibility, a lot more depth, especially at the back, and that they're looking to kind of consolidate that leakiness that they've had in the past.
Okay. So in terms of the key players then, who should neutrals be looking forward to watching?
Key players, I do think Everton brings something very different to the team. I didn't really know much about him when he was first announced, but having looked at some of the videos, he's got a decent first touch. He's known for scoring goals from outside the box, and also being able to be an attacking presence as well, adds a very strong element to his game within the team. Having someone that's really going to drive themselves into the box and cause a lot of problems for defenders, he's going to be one of the main players. I also think that Shinzo Kuroki, if he can really maintain some form, because when he's got form, he's one of the best strikers in the J-League by a country mile, really. And you know, he can turn on a dime with the ball. His first touch is incredible when he's, again, on form. So as long as he's on form, he'll be a very dangerous one. And I also think, just as a little bit of a curveball, mm-hmm. I think Shusaku Nishikawa, the goalkeeper, is one to look out for, because he lost his national team spot and wasn't in the J League best 11. And I think that he is going to want to try to put himself in a position where he can win that back. So he's going to be working a lot harder and trying to maintain consistent form, you know, get a lot of clean sheets, and he's going to want to be a presence to really stand out for the next selections going forward with the national team.
Okay, well, that brings me on to my final question then. What would be considered a successful Asian Champions League campaign for the club, and can they be expected to achieve it?
It's a good question, because they've been in the Champions League six times now. They've won it twice, and they've been knocked out of the group stages twice. So they've got a kind of 33% record for every single stage, really. And having said that, the fans want to win every time they're in it. The fans, the Arawa fans especially, of I think all the J-League fans, it is probably fair to say, they're the ones that want Champions League titles the most. And I definitely don't think that a group stage exit is acceptable, and neither would be a round of 16. So there would be probably a minimum of a quarterfinal appearance would be the expectation from the club, and definitely from the fans. Whether it's achievable, I think they're in with a shout of getting out of the group stage. You know, maybe as kind of pushing it for a second place. But getting to through the round of 16 very much depends on who they're up against and where they're playing as well, because they've got a pretty poor record at home, especially in China. So if they're up against the Chinese side, it's going to be, you know, very much determined on how they play if they're away and so on and so forth. But I do think that, yeah, you could say it about any team really, but if the cards fall in their favor, they're gonna do well. But I do think that Arawa quite often have cards fall quite well for them in the Champions League.
Yeah, they're certainly one of the main draws in this group. It was not the team I was looking forward to drawing as a Jeonbuk fan, that's for sure.
Mm.
That wraps it up. Thanks, Ryan. If our listeners wish to know more about J-League and Urawa Reds, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Stielinho, Stielinho. I tweet quite regularly, more so about Urawa when the J-League season's on, but I tend to tweet quite a lot about just Asian football in general as well.
Okay, thanks again for joining us on the K-League United podcast, Ryan.
Thanks very much, Matt. It's been a pleasure.
After the break, we turn our attention to Chinese Super League side Beijing Guoan. Stay tuned.
Looking to spend some downtime with friends and fellow gamers in Seoul? Drop by Retro Game Bar. Located in Hongdae near Sangsu Station Exit 1, RGB is a retro game-inspired bar where you can play any and all types of games. Test their bartenders' drink mixing capabilities or watch a game cast of your choosing. For those with a competitive side, sign up for monthly tournaments including Tekken, Mario Kart and K-League United's FIFA 19 competitions. Follow RGB on Facebook for tournament info and details on other events throughout the month. Mention that you're a fan of K-League United to their hard-working bartenders when you stop by for a starter shot to kick off the evening. Game on!
Welcome back, listener. Before the break, we were joined by Ryan Steele to talk all things Urawa Reds. We now move on to the fourth and final team in the group, Beijing Guoan, and joining us to preview the Chinese Super League side is Wild East Football Editor-in-Chief Brandon Chemers. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, nice to join you.
Oh, nice to have you. How's it going over there in Beijing?
It's happy times, you know, Chinese New Year, lots of celebrating going on and celebrating our new signing. Kim Min-jae just arrived in Beijing today, so there's plenty of happiness all around.
Oh, plenty of happiness, plenty of sadness here in Korea, but I'm sure we'll get on to talking about Kim Min-jae in due course. It's been a few seasons, though, since Beijing last appeared in the competition, having been knocked out by Jeonbuk Hyundai in the last 16 in 2015. How's the excitement amongst the fans about being back on Asia's biggest stage?
Yeah, I mean, for Guoan, there was a couple seasons during the early 2010s where they're in it basically every year. And like you said, they haven't, it's been a while since they've been out. So there's definite excitement about them being back in. I know a lot of fans are talking about the different away possibilities, away trip possibilities, and there's something really to look forward to this season.
Well, how did Guoan get here then? So can you talk us through their 2018 campaign?
So it was a bit of an up and down. You know, they were in contention for the league for a little while, but that always seemed sort of a year ahead of plan. Roger Schmidt came in towards the end of the season before last and started putting in his system. And so last season was the first full season they had with him. And they got some good results for a while. In the end, they came up short, but they were in the cup final. A really good cup run for them, and they won it in Shandong on the road game. So there's a lot of happiness, even though they would have gotten in anyways because they finished fourth in the league and Shandong finished third. So either way, they were in. It was just a matter of if they went right into the group or if they had to qualify.
Okay, well, so with them back in the Champions League through the FA Cup or fourth place, as you said, what notable moves have the club made in the transfer window in preparation for this?
So, I mean, we already sort of mentioned one with Kim Min-jae there. That is by far the biggest move that they've made.
You're breaking my heart.
yeah, there also is a interesting situation. They have they've added two players, Nico Yanaris and John Ho Sader, who both became Chinese citizens just this year and will play on Guoan as domestic players. Yanaris is sort of famous for having a brief spell at Arsenal. He came up through Arsenal's youth team and I think made two appearances with them. And then he's been at Brentford for past couple of seasons, done all right there. Ho Sader has played with some top Norwegian teams. And so it'll be interesting to see how they do, but it's sort of revolutionary for the CSL and should be good additions for the team.
Yeah, definitely. Is that something that is becoming more common in the CSL, or is this kind of the first rollout of this scheme?
This is the first one. Guoan started talking about sort of midway through last season that this was going to happen. And Evergrande has very quickly found their own player to naturalize, Peruvian. So it seems like it's going to be a trend for at least the next year or two.
Also, as you said, you've mentioned Kim Min-jae. Sore subject for myself as a loyal John Book supporter, but obviously as a Korean football orientated podcast and given the reputation of the player over here, there's a keen amount of interest from our listeners about this move. We've covered it a fair bit on our previous podcast, but just to get the Beijing Guoan perspective, how has his move been received over there?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of excitement about him. You know, China and South Korea were in the same group for the Asian Cup. And so his performance there was watched even more than it would otherwise have been by Chinese fans. And so there's a lot of excitement about the potential that he brings. And it's a signing in a position where Guoan really need help. So it's going to be very important for them in the upcoming season.
Okay. So, well, moving on then. How are Beijing likely to set up in these games? And do these new players match the tactical preferences of the manager?
I think it's going to be interesting to see what he does. Obviously, Kim will definitely play a major factor in these Champions League games. Schmidt tends to play a very pressing game. I think Yanaris, having his midfield talent will definitely help, will give them another option if they want to change things around a little bit. The John Ho Sader, I'm not sure how much he's going to get to play in these games. I have a feeling that he's going to be saved more for the league with the U23 rule. But I definitely think you'll see Kim play a lot.
It's gonna be a difficult one when he turns up in Jeonju on March the 6th, I believe. Well, which players then do you recommend neutrals should be keeping an eye on in this Guan team?
I think the main ones are obviously Cedric Bakambu, who is one of the top scorers in the CSL last year. He's really made an impact since his arrival. And Renato Augusto has sort of found his home in Beijing over the past couple seasons. He had some struggles, but he had a real impact and really showed how good he is last season. And from there, you know, going up against the Korean side, you know, Guan has two ethnically Korean players, Piao Cheng and Chi Zhongguo. And Chi Zhongguo arrived in Guan last year, and he's made a real big impact in the midfield. So if Yanaris doesn't play, I'd expect Chur to play there, and he should really perform well.
Okay. And finally, what are the realistic expectations of the fans in this competition, and can the team meet them?
I don't think expectations are that high this year. Chinese sides, the sides that tend to have gotten back into the Asian Cup for the first time, tend to struggle that first season in the competition. I think that especially with Guan having a lot of hope this year in winning the league, I think that's where the CSL, I think that's where their focus will be more so than the Champions League. They're also obviously in a very, very tough group. I think if they get out of the group, that would be nice, but I don't really think... I think fans kind of expect them to maybe get out of the group and then anything can happen, but it wouldn't be that disappointing to see them get knocked out in the group stage.
Okay, that about wraps it up. Thanks again, Brandon. For those wishing to know more about Chinese football and Beijing Guan, how can they find you?
We are at wildeastfootball.net and on Twitter as well, so Wild East Football.
Okay. Well, cheers, Brandon. Thanks again for joining us on the K-League United podcast.
Thank you.
Once again, I'd like to thank Paul Murphy, Ryan Steele and Brandon Chemers for joining us on the K-League United podcast. Before we go, though, we do have time for a quick mailbag. And before recording the podcast, I had a chance to sit down with Ryan Walters, Scott Whitelock and Paul Neat to have a quick root through what you had sent in.
Yeah, we've had a question in from Branko Bellan. He says, it looks as though a lot of Korean teams will be up against some very stiff competition this year. Which club has the potential to progress the furthest?
Jeonbuk. Well, I don't know. Well, yeah, actually, yeah. But the thing is, yeah. But Jeonbuk and Ulsan have both strengthened very well.
I think what I would say is that Jeonbuk has got the toughest group.
That is a good point.
And they've also got an unproven manager in the helm. So whereas Jeonbuk have got the most potential, I'd say that they're not necessarily, you know, favourites to get through their own group. And if they can't get through the group, then they're probably not going to make it the furthest out of the four Korean teams. I don't know. I think I quite like Gangnam, to be honest.
Yeah, I think to get the furthest.
Yeah.
I think the key word's potential in that question, isn't it? I mean, at the moment, at the time of recording, Macau's still on Gangnam. He's still there. They've got not a difficult group, but they'd be flying out for the second place in that group. They have the potential to actually go through the groups, and then who knows from that point onwards.
I think for them and for Daegu, it's just whatever happens, happens. They just enjoy the ride. For teams like Jeonbuk, Dram, you wish.
I wish.
For teams like Jeonbuk and Ulsan.
We were so close. 2015. Bring me back.
For teams like Jeonbuk and Ulsan, there's a definite expectancy to do well.
Well, I think one of the things we talked about a lot with Jeonbuk last year was how deep that squad was. And I expect it to be a deep squad again this year. But this year, Ulsan is ready to fight on three fronts. Mm-hmm. I think Ulsan, I don't think it's a stretch to say they've had the best transfer window in Korea. They have done tremendous work. They took an already strong squad and made it even stronger. They made it even deeper. So I think the squad rotation that's available, whether or not it's used properly, we'll see. But I think they're built for it. I think Ulsan, and especially if they can win their playoff, if they can get into that group, that is, it's a winnable group for them.
I think Ulsan also have the better manager at the moment for the Champions League, at least. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a manager who's already had experience in the Champions League, whereas John Booker starting off a new chapter.
Yeah, who knows what happened with him?
Yeah. It's a toss up what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think John Booker will be all right domestically, but the Champions League, I think they're going to get found out.
Well, that, like you said, that's a tough group. Mm. It's a really tough group.
We've had a question in through email from Eamon Hay. He wants to know, can Lee Dong-gook break the goal scoring record in the ACL?
He's one, doesn't he? So
he only one.
It depends if he'll be played, because they've got obviously Kim Chinook and Adriano, and they've got Young Ikono in now as well. Who
in Moon Sun-min.
Well, Moon Sun-min and Ebony are going to play out on the wing.
Ah, okay.
So in terms of that actual forward role, it's between four players, and that's Kim Chinook, Lee Dong-gook, Adriano, and Lee Kun-ho, the young lad from Pohang. He'll get a game.
He's going to get it.
He'll get a, he'll get a substitute appearance. And Lee Dong-gook, from a substitute bench, as we've seen the last couple of seasons, he's deadly. You know,
the Kashiwa Racehall game at home.
Well, yeah, last season.
Prime example.
Kashiwa Racehall was fantastic, what he, the influence he had on the game.
Yeah.
And they, what Che Kang-hee did was manage his game time very well. And if they can continue that into this season and just use him when he's needed, then I can see him getting a goal, just a goal from a header.
He'll get a goal.
He'll get a goal, and he'll probably break the record. I'm not too worried about him not doing that.
No, I'm backing my man, Dejan.
No chance.
He's not in the Champions League this year.
No chance, he's not in the Champions League. He already knows Lee Dong-gook's not scoring the goal. So
was it him setting that question?
Yeah, Dejan, to answer your question, no chance. Lee Dong-gook's not scoring any
goals. Your record will be intact until you get back in the ACL in 2020.
More chance of Dae Baek Hee scoring a goal.
Or Sol getting in the ACL.
Well, yeah. Lee Dong-gook will probably still be playing at that point.
In the after the Qatar World Cup.
Captain of the team.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks again for all your questions. We will be addressing this Champions League mailbag in full over the next few podcasts. If you'd like to submit your own question, though, to the podcast, email in at info@kleagueunited.com or message us via Kaylee United on Twitter and Facebook. As for the podcast, please make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. You can also catch each episode every Thursday on Football Nation Radio at 5 p.m. Sydney time or 3 p.m. for those of you here in Korea. As for me, that's it for today. There'll be more Champions League previews in the upcoming fortnight. But for now, goodbye and thanks for listening.